We are in this series of messages that is about getting ready. We've been talking about getting ready for what God has for us, getting ready for Easter, getting ready for God to pour out his blessings and lead us into something new. We've been talking about how do we walk into that. And we started with talking about perspective shifts. And we talked about entering into moments with Jesus that will shape who we are and push out those pieces of us that are hurting and destroying our lives. And then last week we talked about three dangerous prayers that we can pray that will open us up to receiving what God would do in us. And I'm not going to re-preach those messages. They're on our church's app. They're on our website. You can find those there. You can find links on the Facebook page. And I encourage you to do that. Or if one of those was particularly helpful for you, share it with someone. But today I want to talk about dreams. There's all kinds of dreams. There's daydreams. Hopefully you're not daydreaming now. But if you're in school, you daydream about being anywhere but in that desk at times. Maybe at work, you daydream about sitting on the beach or by the river or in the mountains or in Alaska or wherever your favorite place may be. We tend to daydream about being other places. Then there are those times that we have lucid dreams. Have you ever had one of these where you think and realize, hey, I'm dreaming, but you continue to dream anyway? Have a lucid dream. We have those dreams that are recurring. Hopefully, you never actually live the recurring dream of going into school without your pants or falling that never ended. We have those kind of dreams. Sometimes they're nightmares. I had a nightmare this week. It was kind of an unusual one. Probably not one you've ever had. But I was getting my hair cut. That was not the nightmarish part. He was doing a fine job, but the lights blinked off. And I heard the clippers buzz, and I felt something not on top of my head. And the lights came back on, and dude had lowered his clippers, but lowered them a little too close, and it taken a chunk right out of the center of my beard in my dream. And he had then to go back and shave the rest of it off. And the weird part was as he was done, I looked in the mirror and I can remember in the dream saying, that's not my chin. That's not the chin I remember having before the beard. And so then I woke up and immediately was reaching and made sure that it was still there. Like I said, probably not a nightmare that many of you have ever had, but it was one that was kind of traumatic for me this week. We have those kind of dreams, and those may be dreams that maybe we can just call those head dreams. But I think many of us have heart dreams as well. Things that we dream about for our lives. Maybe you grew up dreaming of that wedding day or that marriage or that. Maybe you've dreamed of a family of children. Maybe there was a career that you dreamed of doing or starting your own business or achieving that goal or whatever it was. I love being around kids because they have no sense of the impossibility of their dreams. I love to hear what they are. My children are constantly dreaming some of the weirdest and most wonderful things. One of Noah's from this week, like just this week, Noah and Sophie, unusual things. Noah comes to me, he says, Dad, what do I have to do to have a six-pack? I said, Son, look at me. I don't know. But I said, no, really, though. Here are some things. He's like, all right, I'm doing this and this. I'm going to add this week. I'm going after it. I'm like, God bless you. Go for it. And then Sophia was a little different. We're riding on the way to school. She says, Dad, I learned in science class that sometimes we can be born and our tailbone be a little long, and it's almost like this tiny little tail. Wouldn't it be great if I was born with a long, fluffy tail like a cat? And then I grew little pointy ears like a cat, and I could be like a cat girl. And wouldn't that be great, Dad? I said, like, are you sure that would be great? Are you sure that's what you really want? There's no sense of the impossibility of dreams in our children as they dream about being teachers or doctors or solving the issues of our world or healing cancer or whatever it is they dream about. There is no limitations to what they will believe and go after. And yet for so many of us, our dreams have died. We've just let them drift away and we stop dreaming. We stop believing that God is still at work and that the best is yet to come. Things happen in life and we just give up. Some of us gave up on those dreams that we've carried for so long. Some of us just let them die. Some of us stop believing in them. Some of us chased the wrong dreams for so long and took ourselves into such depths of a pit and misery that we can't imagine things changing and ever being better. And we have given up on dreaming somewhere along the way. We stop imagining that the future is wonderful and full of possibility. And it's sad because I'm convinced that our imagination, our ability to dream, is the very place where God most often speaks to us. It is the very place where God writes His blueprint for our lives, His dream for who we could be and what we could do. Think about it. Acts chapter 2. If you have your Bibles, you can turn there. Acts chapter 2. There are some in the chairs in front of you. If you want to use one of those, it's on page 654. Acts chapter 2, we find this story, and it's the story of the promise of the Holy Spirit. You see, Jesus lived on this earth for 33 years. He walked with and taught His disciples for 3 years and called them to a mission, to a purpose in the world. And then He left them. And He knew that they had in and of themselves no ability to live into that mission, to live according to that purpose. And so He said, I'm going to give you My Spirit. And on Pentecost, that word just means 50. It was 50 days after the festival of Passover in the Jewish culture. 50 days later, the disciples are gathered and they receive the Holy Spirit. And this Spirit fills them. And it's the same Spirit that fills every believer and empowers every believer. It's the promised gift of Jesus when we come to Him. And that Spirit fills them and they spill out of the room they're in. And they're speaking and talking in the streets and nobody can figure out what's going on. So Peter stands up. Peter, now a bold leader from a sissy leader, from a brash leader. Now he's bold and able to speak clearly. And he speaks in Acts chapter 2, verse 14. And he says this, "Listen carefully, all of you fellow Jews and residents of Jerusalem. Make no mistake about this. These people are not drunk, as some of you are assuming. 9 o'clock in the morning." You ever thought about this? Those people who are real dreamers, we assume something's wrong with them, right? We may not say they're drunk, but sometimes we imagine that something's not quite right. And that's what we see happening here. He says, no, they're not drunk, as some of you are assuming. It's 9 o'clock in the morning. It's a little early for that. And he says, no, what you see was predicted long ago by the prophet Joel. And I love this. No one is excluded in this description. Not man, not woman, not child. In the last days, God says, I will pour out My Spirit upon all people. Your sons and daughters will prophesy. Your young men will see visions and your old men will dream dreams. Three words there that we see. Prophesy, visions, and dreams. The one thing that all three of these have in common, they are something that you see. And so what he's telling us is that when the Spirit comes into us, that God's desire is that we begin to see the world differently. You see, we are accustomed to just seeing the circumstances right in front of us. We are accustomed to focusing our eyes on problems, on disappointments, on ourselves, and we fail to see the possibilities. We see the world as it is, but when we are embodied by the Spirit, when we receive the Spirit, what the Spirit does in us is give us the ability to see the world as it could be, to see ourselves as we could be, to see our marriages as they could be, to see our families as they could be, to see our work as they could be. That His desire is to allow us and give us an ability to see beyond the things that are right in front of us, the things that we naturally see. Yet so many times, we give up on those dreams. we give up on the things that he has shown us and written on our hearts and in our dreams, and we stop imagining that God has anything else for us, that God wants to do anything else for us. And we can do it because we think we're not worthy of it. We can do it because we've been through different things. But for whatever reason, too many adults have simply given up on dreaming. And while we give up on our dreams, God never stops dreaming about the possibilities for your life. God never stops dreaming about the possibilities for your life. Now, I think if we're going to begin to dream again, we got to stop and look back at those things that have a tendency to kill our dreams, those dream killers. And we can find them in the story of Abram. And we're going to get to that in just a minute. It's in Genesis chapter 15, and we're going to look at 15, 16, and 17. They're all on pages 10 and 11 in this Bible, and we'll get to it in just a minute. But I just want to give you a little background in case you're unfamiliar. Abram is the one who becomes Abraham. As in his encounter with God and in receiving the promises of God, his name is changed from Abram to Abraham. His wife, her name was Sarai, and it becomes Sarah. So if you come across those two names, it's the same person. One is before they've really received and entered into the promises of God, and the other is after. So we encounter this story when Abram is still Abram in Genesis chapter 15, and he receives a dream, a promise from God. In Genesis chapter 15, beginning at verse 1, it reads this way. Sometime later, the Lord spoke to Abram in a vision. He showed him something and said to him, "Do not be afraid, Abram, for I will protect you and your reward will be great." I love this. Abraham kind of says, "So what? That's great, God. I really appreciate all the blessings." But he says, there's one problem. Right now, every blessing you give me is going to someone else. I don't have a son. And so everything I have will go to my servant Eleazar of Damascus, and everything will then be his blessing. And then in verse 4 it says this, "Then the Lord said to him, 'No, your servant will not be your heir, for you will have a son of your own who will be your heir.' Then the Lord took Abram outside and said to him, 'Look up into the sky and count the stars if you can. That's how many descendants you will have.' And birthed in Abram is a dream, a vision, a possibility that seems beyond possible, that he and his wife will one day have a son, and that one day there will be a legacy, and everything, every blessing, everything that God has done for him will be passed on and continue to be at work in the world. And he imagines and begins to hold on to this dream, but he experiences some setbacks. He experiences some challenges that for many of us are dream killers. We find the first one in Genesis chapter 16, verse 1. It says this, "Now Sarai, Abram's wife, had not been able to bear children for him." So you get what's going on here. Like, just to be kind of blunt and honest, man and wife doing what man and wife have to do to make a baby, and nothing's happening. Doing everything they know to do, would have been going through all of the different things that they could have tried at this point, and nothing is happening. Nothing. But she, there it continues, "But she had an Egyptian servant named Hagar. So Sarai said to Abram, 'The Lord has prevented me from having children. Go and sleep with my servant. Perhaps I can have children through her.' And Abram agreed with Sarai's proposal." And here we find the first of those dream killers, and that is unfulfilled expectations. Can I tell you a secret? Nobody's life turns out the way they expect. Nobody. We grow up expecting and anticipating things. We enter into new jobs anticipating, expecting things. We enter into marriage anticipating and expecting things. We have children anticipating and expecting things. We move to a new community, join a new church, get involved or whatever it is, and we expect things, and it never works out the way we expected. And those differences between what we expected and the reality we experience for many of us create disappointment and heartbreak and letdown. And when we begin to feel let down and heartbroken that our expectations haven't been met, we look to point a finger. And it's certainly not my fault, so it must be somebody's fault. And if I can't find anybody else, it must be his fault. And we allow that to enter in and begin to kill our dreams. It's right there at the center of that song, right at the center of its message. That day he walked out. That day he said he didn't love me. That day that life didn't work out. That day I went to work and they said, you're done here. That day that I took a risk and tried to make something happen and I failed. Life didn't turn out the way I expected. Give up. I let things fall, and I just, you know what? It must not be. Things take longer than we expect. Can I tell you, they quoted this verse. I love this verse. Jeremiah 29:11. I know the plans I have for you. They're for your future. They're for your hope. They're for your good. And we love Jeremiah 29:11, but we leave out 1-10. And 1-10 basically is Jeremiah the prophet standing up saying, lots of prophets have been telling you it's time to go home and everything is going to be great. You're in exile now. You are in Babylon. You don't get to go home. You don't have anything, but the time is coming. It's very near. You're about to go home. And Jeremiah stands up and says, no, they're lying. Yes, God has good plans for you. God has plans for your hope and a future, but it's going to take 70 years before you go home. So settle in, marry, have children, build gardens, and work for the good of the city where you're at. See, we want the good plans. We just want them right now. And when it doesn't happen right now, when we have this vision, this desire, this belief, this dream that we feel is from God, if it doesn't happen the way we want it to right now, we're tempted to just give up. And that's what so many of us do. It's what I wanted to do. You see, I did what Sarah did first. If you look at this story, you find that word. Did you notice? I can have a family through her. Another version says, I can make a family through her. See what she did? God didn't live up to her expectations, so she took matters into her own hands and tried to make it work. A few years back when we started Hydrant Church and it didn't go the way we planned in the first year or so, I took things into my own hands and 45 hours became 55 and then 65 and sometimes 85 hours a week pouring into something and doing everything I could think to do, doing every job that needed to be done. I would get here early on Sundays and do everything that had to be done, run around like a chicken with my head cut off. And week after week, people would ask me, is he okay? And her real inside answer, she would say, no, not really, but, you know, yes, he's fine. He's just got a lot to do. And I took matters into my own hands, and I thought I was making it better, and I was just making it worse. Honestly, if you were here at that time, you can ask those folks. That story is so true. I was just making it worse. And there was this breaking point. And a year in, I wanted to quit. We sponsored WPA. When they were opening, I applied for business side jobs of the school. I didn't know if we were going to make it. And I wanted to give up on the dream. We had this dream of a place like this, a place where people's lives could be changed, a place that would reproduce itself in small, healthy, dynamic communities of faith all over Eastern North Carolina, something I believed in, gave my heart to, and it wasn't working. It wasn't turning out like I expected. I wanted to quit. It was killing my dream. And we had to fight through that season, fight through those unfulfilled expectations and allow him to work. I had to give him the dream back and allow him to produce it again in me and refuel the passion. And Paul even sees this and he gives us some guidance in it and he reminds us that life's tough and our expectations are almost never met. He says this in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 8 and 9. We are pressed on every side by troubles. Ever felt that way? But we are not crushed. We are perplexed, not know what to do. But we're not driven to despair. We are hunted down, but never abandoned by God. We get knocked down, but we are not destroyed. We do not have to allow those unfulfilled expectations to steal our dreams. And while it might not go just the way we expected, it's an opportunity to learn. It's an opportunity to grow. It's maybe God pointing us in a little different direction. Because we may be taking matters into our own hands, and we may be charging ahead, going after the dream right now the way we think it's meant to be. And yet we keep hitting this wall. We keep hitting this wall, and he's trying to give us an opportunity to just twist it a little bit and pursue the dream his way. And that's what had to happen in me. Something radically shifted in the way I led as a pastor, in the way I led as a leader, in the way we developed leaders and built teams. Everything shifted in our leadership and guidance here, and took us from this place that was focused on the task and the mission we were trying to accomplish to a place that was focused on people. And if that hadn't happened, the dream never would have begun to be realized as it is today. But it was unfulfilled expectations that led us there. But if we're not careful, they'll kill our dreams. The second of these dream killers is found in Genesis chapter 17. Genesis chapter 17 is just the next page. If you're using one of the Bibles there, if you're on your phone, that's great. Whatever works for you. Genesis chapter 17, verse 17. Here, Abram is being told that his wife's name is about to change from Sarai to Sarah. That she's going to be blessed with a son from her. He said, yes, I'll bless her richly, and she'll become the mother of many nations. Kings of nations will be among her descendants. And here's Abram's response. Then Abram bowed down to the ground, but he laughed to himself in disbelief. How could I become a father at the age of 100, he thought. And how can Sarah have a baby when she is 90 years old? For many of us, the second of these dream killers is a battle we constantly face, and that's unrelenting doubt. The second killer of our dreams is unrelenting doubt. For me, as we doubt God, we doubt that God is really for us. We doubt that he is working on our behalf. We doubt the words that we sang, that he brings those things, good and bad, and works them together to produce good in our lives. We doubt him. But even more than that, if you're like me, we doubt ourselves. We can see Jesus. We realize he has the power. He has the strength. He's able to do what he wants to do. We doubt that we're able to do what he asked us to do. It was Peter's problem. And I've told this story before, but I think it's so pertinent and helpful right here. You see, Hebrew children, by the time they were the age of 11, they memorized the Torah. That's the first five books, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. Memorized it by the time they were age 11. That's all of them. Now, most of them at this point would stop schooling and begin to learn their family's trade, begin to work in the family business, begin to learn the skills of being a wife and mother. But there were some who would continue on. And between the ages of 11 and 15, they would continue their studies and they would memorize the rest of the Hebrew Bible. That's our Old Testament, all of it, word for word. And then at the age of 15, most of those students would go and begin to learn the family trade. But there were a few who felt like they were called or meant to be a rabbi. And so they would go to the local rabbi and ask to become his disciple. And the way this would work is that the rabbi would begin to ask questions and have the student ask them questions. And they would have this conversation. And most of the time, what would happen is the rabbi would say, son, you clearly love God and his word, but you need to go and learn your family's business. But if he saw something that struck him in this child, if he saw something that made him believe this young one could be what I am, they could do what I can do, they could take my place one day, they would say very simply and clearly the same thing every time. Come, follow me. Then you have Jesus who steps onto the scene, 30 years old. He's baptized by John. Nobody thinks he can teach. The people who've grown up with him his whole life had no idea that he could teach. He was in complete anonymity and obscurity. He steps up and he starts to teach. Everybody's blown away. And he starts going willy-nilly to whoever he finds. At least it seems that way. Here's some guys fishing. Hey, you guys, come follow me. I think you could do what I do. Then he goes to this guy who's sleeping under a tree. Who sleeps under a tree in the middle of the day? Shouldn't he been working, doing something? So he invites that guy, invites the tax collector. Whoever, come follow me. When you were invited to follow the rabbi, you followed the rabbi everywhere he went. You ate what he ate. You did what he did everywhere. There are stories of them even following the rabbi into the bathroom. The blessing you pronounced over a disciple, may you be covered in the dust of your rabbi. What a great blessing. I hope you get dirty. And so we find this story of Jesus walking on the water and his disciples are in the boat, right? And Peter says, hey, he told me to follow him. I'm his disciple. I'm supposed to go where he goes. Hey, if that's you, Jesus, tell me to come out there. And Jesus, one word, come. He steps out onto the water and he walks boldly toward Jesus. But it says that he lost his faith and started to sink. He didn't lose his faith in Jesus. Jesus was still walking on the water. He lost his faith and belief in his ability to go where Jesus had called him to go, to do what Jesus had called him to do. He lost faith in the dream of being that disciple, and he began to sink. The good news, Jesus picked him up and carried him back to the boat. We can't let unrelenting doubt keep us stuck in the boat doing nothing. Because even if we jump out and start to sink, he picks us up and carries us back. It's all good. He was better off. He was better off than the 11. Even though he started to sink, he was better off than the other 11 because he got his butt out of the boat. And he did what he was supposed to do. And we can't let those unrelenting doubts own us and define us and keep us from going after it. And I get it. I don't know why or what it is, and I wish you would take it away. But those doubts and that insecurity is constantly in my own heart and mind. It is a constant battle. It is a constant struggle. And I wonder, because I look in the mirror and I see the weaknesses and I see the failures and I see the setbacks and I see all the ways that I'm not good enough to do what he's asking me to do. And he just says, You forget, I go before you and I go beside you. You forget that when you acknowledge me and trust me, I'll make the path straight. You forget that when you're weak, my strength is revealed. You don't have to doubt, son. I've got you. And if we're going to pursue what he has for us, if we're going to get ready, if we're going to dream again, if we're going to live into those dreams, we're going to have to face unrelenting doubt. And I'm not talking about those little things that come up once in a while and we, you know, kind of get down on ourselves. Oh, I'm talking about this unrelenting doubt that lasts. 70 years is a long, dang time to hold on to a dream. Think about Noah. It was over 100 years building a boat when there was no water around. Jesus waiting 30 years to teach. Can you imagine? He was probably ready about 12. He's like, Dad, I'm ready. Can I go? I'm ready. Let me go. He's like, no, not yet. Wake up again. Today the day we get to go do this? No, not today. For 30 years, knowing what he was there to do, for 30 years called with a vision and a purpose and a dream of what he was going to do in the world and having to wait on it. We get upset if we have to wait a week on anything, an hour. God, you gave me this vision. You gave me this dream. Why isn't it happening right now? I look and I believe from the day we started Hydrant, our goal was never a big church here. Our goal was never big buildings and campus, but it was to be a place where 10 or more healthy, growing, dynamic, smaller churches could be birthed all around Eastern North Carolina, making a difference in their community, connecting people and seeing people filled to the point of overflowing. It was always the dream, but every time we come in and it's one of those days when everybody's sick or one of those days after a deployment or a big group PCS or whatever it is, I mean, we do live in one of these transient kind of communities, 30% turnover every 3 years. It's tough. I think, God, are you really trying to do 10? Like, maybe one? Let's just get one going, God. Come on. And we want to doubt what he's asked us to do. We want to doubt what he's believing. We want to look for an easier way, but we've got to walk into those doubts. Look, doubts are not the enemy. It's our response to the doubts that destroys us. Doubts are good. Can you hear me? Doubts are good. They will force us to own what we really believe. They will force us to search and get a hold of it. And let it get a hold of us. And so we have to enter into those doubts and walk into them and allow them to shape us, not to destroy us. James chapter 1 verse 6 says, ask without doubt, but faith. I think faith is only really truly found on the other side of doubt. And Eleanor Roosevelt, the future belongs to those who believe in the beauty of their dream. We've got to hold on to it and keep walking. We'll find ourselves, though, in the third dream killer. We find it in Genesis chapter 18. Genesis chapter 18, verse 11. It says, Abram and Sarah. Let me just take a step back. So we have visitors who are telling them the time is coming close. So in a year, you're going to have this son. And here's what we see in verse 11. Abram and Sarah were both very old by this time. And Sarah was long past the age of having children. It said, so she laughed silently to herself and said, how could a worn out woman like me enjoy such pleasure, especially when my husband is so old. It's the third dream killer. Impossible circumstances. Impossible circumstances. We look at ourselves and we see our limitations. We see our setbacks. We see our weaknesses. We see our situation and we allow it to kill the dream in us because we let ourselves believe that it's impossible. And see, those impossible circumstances become our excuses. They become our excuses to stop working. They become our excuses to stop dreaming. They become our excuses for why things aren't happening in our lives or why God won't or can't or shouldn't. And we just let them own us. You see, the truth is, you don't lack resources. You don't lack money. You don't lack time. Those limitations are not the problems. What you lack is one good idea, one dream that shows you the way forward. Sometimes we think it's, oh, if I had more money, or if I had more time, if we had a bigger facility, or if we had a better location, or if it wasn't in Goldsboro, if it was this, or if it was that, then it would happen. And if we want to look, and we can do that, we can let those things limit us. We can let those things define us. But we believe in a God who is the God of the impossible, the God that raised Jesus from the dead, the God who conquered sin and death, the God who split the sea, the God who created all that is, the God of whom Jesus said that with God all things are possible. And we look and say, well, he won't or can't. It's never going to happen. So we just don't. We just don't even try. We let it just kill our dreams right there in their tracks. I mean, think about it. Abram and Sarah had every reason in the world, every reason in the world to give up on their dreams. Every reason in the world to stop believing. The dream, the call, the vision, the promise was for a child. And they were over 100 years old. It just seemed impossible. It had taken too long. Their expectations when they received that promise was be this year. And it wasn't this year. And it wasn't the next year. And so it must not be coming. And they just doubt. Doubt themselves. Doubt their reality. Every reason in the world to give up on the dream and let it die. But Romans chapter 3 verse 4 tells us this. Abraham believed God. Abraham believed God. Abraham believed God and was credited to him as a right relationship with God. Abraham believed God. God created you and me with an imagination so that he could give us a blueprint for our lives. It's the way he speaks to us. It's the reason he gives us dreams. It's how he communicates. How he shows us things. And the enemy knows this. He knows that God will speak to us, that he will show us dreams, that he will write his plan on our hearts and imagination. And so he works tirelessly to ensure that we stop dreaming and stop believing that the best is yet to come. Stop believing that God still has a good future for us. And it's time, church, that we dream again. It's time as a church that we dream. It's time as individuals that we dream again. The world, our community, our neighborhoods, our families need us to dream again. The world needs us to dream. We need church planters. We need those who will invest in the community, those who will bridge the gaps of racial injustice and inequality. We need those who will be teachers, and we need those who will serve, those who will feed the hungry, those who will give of themselves to produce families that honor him and make a difference in our community. Those who will commit to loving and serving their spouse. We need those who will dream of what is possible instead of staring at what seems impossible. We need to be a place and a people who are known as dreamers that others look at and think they're a little bit crazy. Somebody say amen. We are in church still. Good grief. We need to dream again. Wake up. Open our eyes and dream. To stop just dreaming in our sleep. To take time and imagine. So how do we do that? How do we dream again? When we stop dreaming, when we've given up, how do we dream again? Habakkuk. I don't know how you're supposed to say it. It's one page toward the end of the Old Testament. Sorry. Gotta catch my breath. Uh-oh. I had a dog-eared page. I'm never gonna find it again. Like this one page. There it is. All right. If you need help, it's page 559 in this Bible. Page 559. Habakkuk chapter 2 tells us how we can dream again. We find it in chapter 2, verse 1. I will climb up to my watchtower and stand at my guard post. There I'll wait to see what the Lord says and how he will answer my complaint. Then the Lord said to me, write my answer plainly on tablets so that a runner can carry the correct message to others. This vision is for a future time. It describes the end and it will be fulfilled. If it seems slow to be taking too long, wait patiently, for it will surely take place and it will not be delayed. Quickly, five things. First, get alone with God. He climbed up into the watchtower. He got alone with God. So many of us have filled our lives with so much stuff and so much activity and so many people. We get into our homes and we fill our homes with so much noise. The TV's constantly on. The screens are constantly glowing. And we never stop and get alone with God. Psalms chapter 46 verse 10 says, be still and know that I am God. Which tells us if I never get still, I'm not going to know God. in a world where everything is so active and so going and so blaring, if we're really going to dream again, we're going to find it in the stillness, in a close and quiet connection with God. Getting alone in the wait, in the watch hour, and waiting for it. Committing ourselves, number two, committing ourselves to be in His Word. Committing ourselves to be in this Bible, to read this Bible. You see what happens to us? What happens to our dreams when we step away from the voice of God, when we stop hearing God, is that the passion begins to wane. The desire begins to wane. The motivation begins to wane, because when we're in this Word, it fuels our passion. It fuels our trust for God, and therefore it fuels our dreams. We need this. It is the fuel for who we are meant to be. We need it daily, daily in and out. Jesus said, "This is so important. I need this even more than I need food to live." You see, our life is birthed out of our dreams, not the bread we eat. And if we have lost our dreams, we have lost the possibility of our life. We need this. Now, maybe you remember, some of you were here a little while back, and I shared about a great little tool. It's an app. It's called Go Tandem. You can go to gotandem.com and find it. You can look it up on any kind of device. Go Tandem. You go in, you download the app, and you can put in a little information about yourself. Maybe a challenge that you're facing, a temptation, or maybe some kinds of verses that you're looking for, and tell it how often, and it'll send you a verse at given times every single day. Somebody, I know several of you use this app. I see you posting about it and sharing verses. I had somebody out of the blue text me this week and said, "Hey, I just wanted to thank you for sharing about Go Tandem those months ago. I downloaded the app and I read those verses every day, and being in the Word has made such a difference. In fact, I usually at least once a day take those verses and send them to my kids, and it's making a difference in our family." If we're going to become who we're meant to be, if we're going to live out those dreams, if we're going to dream again, it's going to happen when we get ourselves back into His Word, back into the Bible, and allow it to fuel us. Third thing is write it down. He told him to write it down. Write it down. As long as the dream is in your head, it's easy to forget. It's easy to write off. It's easy to excuse. God-sized dreams have to be written down. It holds us accountable. It tells us we're not crazy when we want to give up, that we really did sense and hear God speaking to us. Write it down. Write it down. Write it on the mirror in your bathroom. Write it somewhere you can post it on your car. Make it the screen for your phone so every time you look at it, I don't care what you have to do, write it down. Otherwise, we can write it off. And then he said he's supposed to take that dream and hand it to the man who runs with it. So that means we need to get up in the morning, wake up, and do something. Do something. God doesn't give us a dream and say, "All right, you sit back in the recliner and I'll make it happen." So this is a dream for what He is making possible in our lives. And we can look at our lives right now and say, "This seems impossible. I can't get from here to there." And He never meant for you to. There are 1,000 little steps in between. And there is something you can do right now that will move you in that direction. And when you do what you can right now, it makes something new possible tomorrow that's not possible right now. So do what you can today that will unlock your ability to do something tomorrow that you can't do right now. See, we dream of 10 churches, and we don't have the resources of the right people yet to launch that next one, but we're researching. And we're praying, and we're working, and we're learning everything we can about planting. We're learning everything we can about leadership. We're learning from the business world about franchising. We're learning from the friends who plant churches. We're learning everything we can, and we're getting ready. We're exploring. We're waiting. We've already started saving the money for that first plant. We're doing something we can do right now so that tomorrow we'll be ready to do what He wants us to do tomorrow. So wake up and do something, even if it feels tiny, Even if it feels like it's not enough, even if it feels like it's hopeless, do something. That one something will continue to fuel the dream and the desire and open opportunities. And number five, we're going to spend a whole week on this one soon. Don't give up until you're dead. I know Abram probably looked at himself in the mirror and felt like he was about dead. But he wasn't. He was not dead yet. And we are not told that this was some kind of supernatural birth. So you guys see, it was still working. There are things that are possible that seem impossible. So don't give up until you are dead. Listen, still breathing. Heart is still beating in your chest. And Dale Turner's right when he said, dreams are renewable. And no matter what our age or condition, there are still untapped possibilities within us. And there are new and beautiful things waiting to be born. Let's be dreamers, Hydrant Church. Let's model it for our children so they know to never give up and stop dreaming. Let's dream again. Let's don't be people who just think about it. And when we fail or we hit a roadblock or we drop the ball or life doesn't meet our expectations, we just give up and throw our hands up like it's helpless and hopeless. Let's be those who continue to work day in and day out, whether we feel like we're in anonymity, whether it feels like it's pointless. Let's be dreamers. Let's be those who believe that anything is possible for anyone. Let's continue to believe. That's what this right here, this table, that's what it's all about. And each week during Lent, we stop at the end of our time together and we receive communion. Because it reminds us of who we are. Jesus made a covenant with his disciples. He said, this is my body broken for you, my blood spilt for you. Because not even death has the last word when God is involved. There are no more hopeless situations when Jesus steps in. There are only possibilities. He is greater than we can imagine. His love for us is deeper than we can fathom. And his willingness to pour out blessings is more extensive than we could ever believe. He said, I gave you the greatest gift of all in my son. Why would I hold out anything else on you? And this is Jesus saying, the world is changing. It is not always going to be the way it is right now. My kingdom is coming. The world is being moved toward justice. And you may not be able to see it easily right now. But this is the sign of my promise to you. That the best is yet to come. And when we come to the table, it's our promise to believe, our promise to join him in that dream, to let him birth that dream in us, that new life in us.